Okay, so then we continue.
So this was where we have left the setup. So the coincidence, so when both photon goes through and when both photon are absorbed by Alice and Bob, when Alice turn the polarizer of theta and Bob of minus theta, then the quantum mechanical result is clear. It's cos squared 2 theta.
Should I just check?
Yeah. And we also developed a trivial, the simplest possible classical model when the photons comes out HH and VV. And the result is this one up. So definitely they do not coincide apart from theta equals 0 and theta equals p divided 2. So the question is if you can invent some more advanced classical approach that reproduces the data of, the results of quantum mechanics in some form, but still in using local realism. So by really having a perfectly deterministic outcomes. So we will find, let me already tell the results, that no matter what we will have, each classical model has a bound, this is a kind of exactly Bell inequality, of this type. And this is what we would like to find. Where, again, remember, theta 1 is equal theta, theta 2 is equal minus theta. In that particular case, when we just have that displace. And if I plot this, already just to see how it is, so this is actually, this is Bell. It goes like that. It is here in the middle. So this is our trivial classical model, okay, very far off. This is the quantum mechanical result. And then you have the Bell one, which, so each model, classical model, will actually be above that. In the best it can do it is exactly there. So there is no way that you get to the quantum mechanic result. And this is what we would like then to see how do we come to this result, so to say. This is an example of Bell inequalities for this particular system, but pretty general in the sense that it shows that classical theories based on local realism are limited. They cannot reproduce quantum mechanics, no matter what. And so in order to see it, so we should, how should such a model work? We should imagine that the photon going to the right, to the left, the photons going to Alice, carries hidden in it, in some form that, of course, no idea what, when it is emitted by the source, some function L of theta. And this function L of theta tells me if the photon will go through or not when I measure along the theta direction. So it has this function inside. It is, of course, some kind of hidden variable. And suppose that theta is then 10 degrees, then we can have that L of 10 degree can be either 1 or minus 1. If it is 1, it means that the photon goes through the polarizer tilted by 10 degree. If the function L is minus 1, then it is blocked. So if you have this function, you would have the perfect knowledge of what the photon would do. And for each choice of theta, that you can turn your polarizer. So this is how it should, so this would be a hidden variable for that. But at the same time, the photon on the right should carry the own function r for right of theta in order to know, in order that when we then, so Bob turns his polarizer of theta, then this function is either plus 1 or minus 1, then there is a clear outcome if the photon goes through or doesn't go through. through the polarizer of Bob. Of course, each time, this is for one setup, we repeat the experiment many times. So actually, we will have a set of function L kappa of theta and R kappa of theta, where kappa is the repetition of our experiment. So one means the first experiment, so two photons. Two means the second pair of photons. Three means the third pair of photons, and so on. Now, how this will look like? For instance, if we put both theta, theta 1 equal theta 2 equal 0, so when we take, basically, they still point in the H horizontal direction, the polarizer, so we didn't tilt anything, then the function L1 of 0, L2 of 0, and so on. So this will be the result of Alice. So what Alice will see will be something like 1, minus 1, 1, 1, minus 1. So in some cases, the photon goes through. In some cases, it's absorbed. And it should be actually 50-50, 50% up, 50% down. We do not know this function. This can be a very complicated function coming from some hidden dynamics that we do not, we cannot determine, but we just assume that this function exists, that it is given. And this would be, for theta equals 0, that should be the outcome. But of course, if this is the case, what about the function, what about for Bob, that will measure, if he didn't tilt its polarizer, something of this type? It should be exactly the same, because in this particular case, when both didn't tell the polarizer, the coincidence is 1. So it means that in that particular case, the function, the outcome of this list of 1 and minus 1 goes through, doesn't go through, should be exactly the same. Otherwise, you don't reproduce the results for theta equals 0 when the coincidence is 1. Now, how do we proceed? So this is the situation. Up to now, of course, for theta equals 0, we can perfectly understand. So this model can describe the data. But we can then do the following. Let's assume that we tilt only the polarizer of Alice. So let's us consider for the next step, we consider theta 1 equal theta and theta 2 equal 0. Okay, if we go back to the formula, in the case the quantum coincidence in this particular case, when theta 1 is equal to theta and theta 2 is equal to 0, I remember that the general one was cos 1 cos 2 plus sinus 1 sinus 2 squared. If theta 2 is 0, this becomes 0, this becomes 1, this becomes cos squared theta. So the in that particular case, the coincidence is reduced. And actually, we could also say that the mismatch, which is, so how often the lists will be different. This is now I put the present example. It should be 1 minus cos squared theta is sinus squared theta. So if now I consider the list L1 theta. So I just turn the polarizer of Alice, not the one of Bob. So for Bob, I still have R1 0, R2 0. I didn't do any change. So the list of Bob stays the same. Minus 1, 1, 1, minus 1, etc. Now the list of Alice changed a bit, because we turn the polarizer. And how much should it change? It changes in such a way that the mismatch is now sinus squared of theta. So in some cases where before there was perfect agreement, which is here always, because they always have the same result, now it is broken. For instance, in the first case, there is still agreement. In the second, yes, and in the third, maybe you have a disagreement. Then you have agreement again, and so on. So there are some cases in which you break the agreement. Okay? And this is the case in which we tilt the polarizer of Alice. But of course, what we can do is the opposite, is to keep Alice by zero and tilt the one of Bob of minus theta in that direction. So basically, so we would like to go, so we start with this situation, then we move only Alice, then we move only Bob in that direction, then we move both. This is the idea, so to say. So we go back to this particular list. And we consider theta 1 equals 0 and theta 2 equal minus theta. So we say we change the one of Bob of in the other direction. And in this particular case, then the list of Alice should go back to the original one. So L1, 0, L2, 0, etc. And this is equal again, you can copy 1 minus 1, 1, 1 minus 1, etc. And what about the list of Bob? This will be R1 minus theta, R2 minus theta, etc. It must change a bit because we did this stuff. And in particular, the quantum coherence in that case, for that particular case in which theta 1 is equal 0 and theta 2 is minus theta, is also cos squared theta. You can see it from the general expression with the two angles. So the mismatch in this particular case will be again 1 minus cos squared theta is equal sine squared theta. And it means that, for instance, the coincidence is broken. We can say that in that particular case, for instance. Then the rest, let's keep it. So basically, in this numerical example, I say that in the third entry, the coincidence was broken. And in this here particular case, in the second entry. It could also be that the third entry as well is there. But one thing is sure, the mismatch. So now let's go back to, let's look at the case, this one. So if you have local realism, it means that this is the outcome always when you take Bob into minus theta. And this is the outcome when you take Alice in theta. Because these are fixed. If you have such a setup, these are fixed. And then the question is, which is the mismatch of these two strings of numbers? So the mismatch is at most 2 times sine squared of theta. So this is when the switch was on different places. If the switch is in the same place, it can even be that they are still, the strings are still the same. But the mismatch for when you take theta 1 equal theta and theta 2 equal minus theta is, so this is the maximum. So basically when this is the switch, it happened to a certain parts, and the switch here happened exactly at other positions. And this is then, the mismatch is 2 sine squared theta. It means that the coincidence of this local, actually of any local model, must be larger than 1 minus 2 sine squared theta. Now, this expression is valid in general, of course, but it makes sense only for theta smaller or equal pi 4.
because otherwise that becomes a negative number. And this obviously the coincidence is a positive number between 0 and 1. One can repeat the very same stuff by starting actually at p half. I will not do it, but it's the same stuff with the strings. And you will find basically that the coincidence will be larger or equal to 2 sine square theta minus 1. So in the end, you put everything together and you find that any classical model must be larger or equal to 1 minus 2, which is this one. And this is exactly the Bell limit for this setup. And this shows that no matter how you construct this classical local realistic model, there is no way you describe the results of quantum mechanics. So quantum mechanics goes beyond that. So if we go back to the example of Bertelmann, the socks of Mr. Bertelmann are not fixed as long, the color of the socks, as long as someone looks at them. So it is really different. And there are different testable predictions. And this was done in a variety of different experimental setups. Also by, for instance, making sure that the efficiency of the detectors must be very good. Because if you lose some photons, or if you get some photons in the wrong, you just make some wrong measurements, then you should be careful. So this was done that some detector's efficiency loophole that you have to, in order to be sure to have disproven the Bell inequalities, because the Bell inequalities are for classical systems. In order to disprove them, you should make sure that all possible kind of loopholes are, so to say, eliminated as much as possible. And this is what we have now. So the very last experiments try to use, they were done with very far away detectors, when Alice and Bob are very far, for instance, even to avoid some luminal. So if they are close, you could imagine that they could still send a signal to them. But if they are at some space-like distance, then they cannot. Or by using, of course, random choice for which angle Alice and Bob will measure, and so on and so forth. There is actually a pretty nice Wikipedia article about Bell tests and loopholes of the Bell. Yes?
I know that Anton Zeilinger from Vienna invests a huge amount of money in this.
Yes. Exactly, to do something in this direction, to measure here, and to make the error so small that you are sure that you are in the realm where only quantum mechanics can be correct. So you are below the Bell limit. And what I think it is beautiful of this approach is that you don't kill one theory, you kill a class of theories. This is actually something that we would definitely need for supersymmetry or something like that. But you can always change the parameter in such a way that you are in agreement with data. Here, no, it doesn't matter what you do, no classical theories will reproduce the data, no matter what. And of course, one can generalize it to different systems, but the basic idea is always the same. I would like still to do something related to this. Wait, I have to check. I just want to tell the right name, because before I didn't tell. So the next thing that I would do is something similar to the Bell inequalities, because I think it is very beautiful. But in a case where you don't have inequalities, you have equalities. You have equalities that can only hold in quantum mechanics, and the equality of classical theory is the opposite one. So it's the same stuff, but in a sense even stronger. Aha. It is an experiment done by exactly Greenberger, Horn, Zeilinger, and actually also sometimes there is also M from Mermin that worked in the very same idea. So this is what I would like to do next. So here I can, there are also other examples of such classical correlations that you can put, where you basically always need different directions, because if you look only at one direction, at one theta, then usually it's not enough. You have to change the setup and check up for different correlations. And then you find that exactly the quantum ones are really peculiar. They cannot be classical. Okay. G, A, Z, and sometimes also M, experiment, or setup, and so on. So first thing, so as I said, this is also an idea of is related to Bell inequality. I mean, in this case, we have equalities. But the idea is similar. So we have a sender, which sends, and now we'll say what, to three different observers that we called A, B, and C. No, white AMB is it good? No, sorry. No, let me call it in a different way, because I will use A and B for the observables. So let me call it experimenter 1, experimenter 2, and experimenter 3. And A and B are what actually the characteristic that they can measure. You can see they can put, they have a switch, they can choose A or B on the switch. So let's make a classical example. Suppose that I the sender sends piece of papers, okay, that you can, then the observer can either look on one side or the other side of this piece of paper. And let's say that one part is yellow and the other is blue, okay? So the sender can send to the first observer basically one piece of paper where on one side there is the number one and the other side also the number one or minus one. So basically the sender sends to the observer a couple of numbers that can be something like, for instance, one to the first observer, to the first experimenter. It can be minus one to the second, and it can be minus one to the third. Now, basically, it is like that. If experimenter one looks at property A, which is, let's say, the yellow part of this piece of paper, then he gets the result one. If you look at B, he also finds one, and so on and so forth. So this is an absolutely classical thing. And I repeat the experiment. So of course, the sender sends two information, but the experimenters can choose either A and B. So we'll either see one or either see minus one. So for instance, so the second time the sender can send something of this type, one minus one. Of course, this don't need to be equal. So the number that it is on one on the yellow part doesn't need to be the same on the blue part. The second experiment can be one minus one, and here one minus one, and so on. So basically, what in the end you will have is a list that experiment one does, experimenter 2 does, and experimenter 3 does. So it can be, for instance, that E1, E2, E3, you could have some following outcome. That E1 measure let's see how I do. A1 equal 1. Then you have A1, wait. And the second measure something like, so this is B2 equal 1 and B3 equal minus 1. So that means that the first experimenter measure A and finds 1, the second experimenter measure B and finds 1, then the third experimenter measure B and find minus 1. And then you have a list of this that you may get. You could have, of course, something like, it doesn't matter, something that at least looks very random, and so on and so forth. But then assume the following. The experimenters meet, and they look at their list of data. And suppose that they always find the following setup, that when one of those has measured A, so watch the yellow part of the piece of paper, and the other two measured B, they always have that the product is 1. So for instance, you always find that A1, B2, B3 is always 1. This also means that A2, B1, B3 is equal 1, and A3, B1, B2 is equal 1. So whatever the sender is sending, it has this property. And this is what they settle. They just see that they have this. Well, then they can make the following conclusions and say, if this is true, and this is what they can verify because they check all the list of data, so they can always say, okay, when two of them measured B and the other measured A, they always say that the product of the three numbers is 1. They conclude out of this that actually A1, A2, A3, so when they all three measure A, then this should be also 1. How do they do it? But this is because 1 is equal to A1, B2, B3, A2, B1, B3, and this is 1 by definition, A3, B1, B2, but this is equal to A1, B1 squared, A2, B2 squared, A3, B3 squared. So, and of course, B1 squared is always 1, so this is A1, A2, A3. So they conclude that whatever the sender is sending, if it is fulfilling this rule that measuring 1A and 2B is 1, then also measuring 3A should be 1. This is a classical consequence of whatever the sender is sending. Now, what it is interesting is that you can devise a quantum system that it is exactly the same as this, but for which you have the following. You have minus 1. Exactly the opposite of what a classical thinking would tell you. Of course, the sender doesn't know what E1 and E2 and E3 will measure. Of course, if the sender would know that, could send some fake stuff in such a way that A1, B2, B3 is 1 and A1, A2, A3 is minus 1. Yes, he could do that, but he doesn't know. So he has to send something. He has no knowledge of what E1 and E2, E3 will measure because what they do is completely random. So you have no other idea that you have no other possible conclusion that out of these three rules that they always see it is fulfilled, this one should be 1. Do you agree on that? So this is crucial for this. This is an example of, so this one is an example of, so to say, Bell condition on a classical system. So each classical system should fulfill this in this setup. And it's not an inequality, it's an equality of this type. So it is like that. Each classical system based on local realism, sent in this piece of papers or whatever you want, should be such that A1, A2, A3, so when all of them have 1, then the only possible combination would be 1, 1, 1, 1, minus 1, minus 1, minus 1, 1, 1, but the minus 1, 1, minus 1, but the product should be 1, should be plus 1. This is the only way to make sense then of this. Well, the point is that, again, in quantum mechanics, you can have a similar situation in which A1, A2, and A3 is minus 1. And this is exactly a completely breaking of the Bell equality in this case, so to say. Because in this case, it's not an inequality, it's not a bound, it is really a strict result. So this makes this, so to say, this experiment pretty peculiar. And how this is done? Well, of course, the sender cannot send classical pieces of paper with some number 1 or minus 1 written on the yellow and the blue part, because for that you will never get such a result. So this is a classical system. But the sender is sending electrons. And he's sending electrons in this particular thing, so he's sending one electron to experimenter 1, one electron to experimenter 2, and one electron to experimenter 3. But he chooses a very peculiar quantum state, which is this. S square root 1/2 plus, minus. So it means that either all three electrons are plus, or all three electrons are minus along the z direction. Okay? This is what he says. But he says this still doesn't solve our problem, because the question is still, what is A and what is B? So what kind of measurements are those? Well, the measurements A and B are, in this particular case, the measurement of the spin along the x direction and on the spin along the y direction. So now I will recall it. So A is actually sigma x and B is sigma y. It is not sigma z, because for sigma z you wouldn't get it. So these are eigenstate of sigma z, but you don't have this. So let me remind how does it look. So this, the matrix sigma z, so if you put it as a matrix, it is this one. So it tells if the spin is up or down along plus minus. This is exactly what it does. So actually, so this is the matrix. If we use it as operator, sigma plus is equal plus, and sigma minus is minus minus. We will not need this, but this is just as to recall it. And what is sigma x? Sigma x, the matrix, is 0, 1, 1, 0. So sigma x, if as an operator, I mean, if I would like to really be strict, I should put this. So if we put it as an operator, sigma x is such that if it applies to plus, it gives me minus. If applied to minus, it gives me plus. So it switches them. But there is still sigma y. And sigma y is the following. So these are, of course, the Pauli matrices of the spin and so on, something that it is in any basic course of QM. And this is 0 minus i, 0. So it also switches, but it does in a particular way, because sigma x plus is minus i minus, and sigma y plus, and sigma y minus is I plus. So both of them, both x and y, switch, but there is an extra I in the case of the y case. So x is a simple switch here. We have also an extra sign and a y in particular. And now, so we go back to our measurement of that state of the our three observer. Suppose that the first observer sigma measure along the x direction, so A, the second along the y direction, and the third along also the y direction. And you apply this on S. This is square root of
I think the minus sign with the y operation should be in the other direction.
No, why? No, it is good. If you apply it to plus minus, I get minus I minus. If I didn't, it will not be crucial, but I think it is correct, because if I use 0 minus I 0 on 1, 0, which is plus, this is, shit, you're right. 0, I. Yeah. Sorry, yes. Yes. It will not change the result, because this minus doesn't play any role. The I is important. So if I now use sigma x1, sigma y2, sigma y3 on S, so sigma x1, this only changes. The first state becomes a minus. But then I have sigma y applying on plus, so I have I squared. So this becomes I squared is minus, so minus, 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 and then you do the same game, you will get another minus 1, plus, plus, plus. But this is nothing else than S. Because minus, minus is plus. So it means that in that particular case, the so when there is one A and two B, so this is when the first is A, the other two is B, this would be the that would be our A1, B2, B3. This is always plus 1, because the eigenvalues is 1. So actually, it means that sometimes they will find, sigma x can find 1 or minus 1, sigma y as well, sigma, so sigma x1 can be 1 minus 1, sigma y2 1 minus 1, and this as well. But the being an eigenstate, it means that always the product must be plus 1. And it means that, so that this is, you can do the same by taking 1x and 2y, and by saying that, for instance, the first is y, the second is x, etc. So the other two cases doesn't change. So these other two will also be true. So all these three equations will be true in this quantum system. But then, what it happens if we try to do our very last operation when we measure only A? So where the classical situation should bring us to a 1 as well. So then we should have something like sigma x1, sigma x2, sigma x3 on the state S. But now, because of the property of the spin, that x, this operator change plus to minus, so this is square root 1 half, minus, 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 plus, 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 this is minus s. So it means that a1, a2, a3 will be always minus 1 for the three observers. So exactly the opposite as the is what the classical Bell equality in this particular case would tell us. So in this particular system, that by the way was realized experimentally, you have a clear deviation from any classical expectation. So the beauty, as I said, is that it is equalities. You didn't even have to play with inequalities. So it is another example of Bell, if you want, but more I would say even for some, from some point of view, even more striking. Okay, what time do we have? We still have time. The question is what to do. If to start now Bell, I do not know if it is a good idea. To start again, the bomb. No, I think I will do the following. The Bohmian mechanics, I will leave it tomorrow because I would like to do it to start with the Bohmian mechanics and stay on that. So, what I would like still to do for today is the quantum teleportation. because this is a shorter topic that can be done in the remaining time for today. Okay, the first thing, let's do the so-called, recall the so-called no-cloning theorem. I consider the basis, let's say the basis 0, 1 for simplicity, so it is a kind of qubit basis when you have either 0 or 1. This can be the, again, the electron plus minus, this can be the photon, horizontal, vertical, whatever, doesn't matter. And this is done by showing that you cannot have such an operator that clones. So suppose that, so assume that there is an operator you see, unitary, and linear, of course. Which does this the following job, which manage to copy a certain state 0 to a given state phi. So it means that you start from a certain phi that you would like to clone. You give a bit with 0 in, and your result is a state phi. So it basically transform 0 to phi, and this should be valid for each phi that you can imagine and write down. So each phi belonging to the Hilbert space, that of course. But that means that if such an operator exists, it should be such that if you start with 2, 0, the outcome should be 0, 0, of course. I mean, it leaves the 0 that you put in untouched because it is already the same. So let me, it can also be written as 0, 0. And if you plug, if you start, you would like to copy a 1, this, in that particular case, should transform the 0 to a 1. So this will be 1, 1. 1, 1. So up to now, everything looks fine. Of course, you could imagine something like that. But let us now start to some particular state. Let's say psi equal alpha 0 plus beta 1. And then, I mean, if this is true, if our cloning operator is real, it should transform our 0 to psi as well. That is, being psi alpha 0 plus beta 1 times alpha 0 plus beta 1. This is actually alpha squared 0, 0, plus alpha beta 0, 1, plus alpha beta 1, 0, plus beta squared 1, 1. So this is what this operator should do. But on the other case, on the other hand, being a linear operator, you could also write like that. First split it alpha 0 plus beta 1 times 0, and this should be equal alpha uc 0, 0 times 0 plus beta uc, this hypothetical operator, 1 times 0. And this is equal to, now you can do, because I mean this, we know the results from this and from this, these are exactly these two. So this is alpha 0, 0 plus beta 1, 1. Look at these two and these two, they are completely different stuff. So you cannot have any, so UC doesn't exist. So you cannot copy a quantum state as you want. Yeah, but this is all operations that we can do on quantum states are. Yeah. Yeah, you must, all what you, all the operations you can do are unitary and linear. Yeah.
So you, since evolution is unitary.
So this operator must be unitary. I mean, that.
Yeah.
So it means that you cannot, you basically you cannot have such a cloning.
Three particle state to copy the state of one particle or another and then change the third one to something else.
Yeah, this is what I would like still to do. So you can transport, but you cannot clone. You can use the, but when you want to send your bit of information to, from Alice to Bob, you can do that. You can teletransport it, but you actually destroy your own. So you destroy your own copy. So you transport it, you didn't copy it. Okay, where is it? Okay, before going to that, let me do the following, and it is also related to all this, and we will say in a second exactly to this teletransportation, and actually how to squeeze two bits in one. So suppose again that I start with my quantum state that you already saw hundreds of times, 1/2 0 0 plus 1 1, which is absolutely the same that HH plus VV or whatever. It is just the usual quantum superposition. And then suppose that the first one goes to Alice, as we say, and the second to Bob. Now there are some operations that Alice can do on her photons, on her photon, or on her qubit, photon, electron, whatever. And then after she does this operation, that must be unitary, she can send this operator, this qubit to Bob. And then Bob has two of them. But by doing basically some manipulation of only one qubit, using entanglement, Alice can send four different information to Bob, and not only at 0, 1, but basically a two-bit system. Not only one bit, but two bit. Well, what Alice can do? Alice can do the following. Can leave her photon untouched. So she applies an operator U1, which is the identity. So she does nothing to her photon. Okay. So in that particular case, so imagine. The photon goes to Alice. Alice changes it and sends it back to Bob. So Bob, in the end, has a certain state. If Alice does nothing, then the final, what Bob gets, is exactly this state. Of course, because Alice did nothing, just took it and sent it back through a mirror back to Bob. And then Bob has exactly that state P. But we call it C1 because this is the first possibility what Alice can do. The second thing that Alice could do is to change sign. Is to invert. I just follow the order that I have here, no, that doesn't matter. So this is actually related to the sigma x of before. But so now it basically sends 0 to 1, 1 to 0. So in this particular case, C2, which is the state that the final state that Bob has with two qubits, is 1 0 plus 0 1. But what she still could do is just to change sign. She could do all these are unitary transformation, of course. So 1 0 0 minus 1. This basically sends 0 to 0 and 1 to minus 1. And the final state, Psi 3, is in that particular case 1 over square root of 2, 0, 0, minus 1, 1. Or the last thing that she could do, so u4, is switch and change sign. 0, 1, minus 1, 0. That means that 0 is going and here I do not know if I have the sign correct, because it's before. No, maybe I should put here the minus then. Let's see. Let's do the calculation. Minus 1, 0. The 0 is this one. This is 0, minus 1. Yeah, so I should do it here. Or if I want, sorry, let me do like that, and then it was correct as I had it. Yeah. Okay. And then the final form that I have is 1 over square root of 2. 1, 0, minus 0, 1. Okay, now why is interesting this stuff? Because Alice can do a single operation on her qubit. I mean, these four different operations of a single qubit, on a single one, send it to Bob, and now Bob has four different information, because these are all mutually orthogonal to each other. So it means that Alice can do her operation, then Bob can do a measurement, and basically, depending on the outcome, 1, 2, 3, 4, Bob gets one of four different information, and not only a single, not only 1, 2, but four different ones. Of course, in order to do it, we use the fact that there was the entanglement, and this particular initial photon that already went to Bob, then Alice only modifies her own photon and that sends farther to Bob. And something similar can be done by, in order to use, to develop this teleportation. So in order to using, we will use similar operation on the photon. Let's see how it does. But in order to do, it's not enough to have two qubits, we need three. And how does it go? So suppose that Alice, again, has a kind of bit that she would like to copy, and not to copy, to send, to transport to Bob. And this is some general qubit of this type. And this is what she would like to transport. On top of that, Alice and Bob have the very same system Psi, which is written over there. That is this entangled copy 0, 0 plus 1, 1. So the full system that they have is phi Psi. This is alpha 0. Plus beta 1. This is what Alice would like to copy. This is her first qubit. And then the second one is square root 1 half 0 0 plus 1 1. So I just extended it. This is alpha square root of 2 0 0 0 plus alpha square root of 2 0 1 1 plus beta square root of 2 1, 0, 0, plus beta square root of 2, 1, 1, 1. So this is a, and remember that the first two photons are with Alice. These two photons are with Alice, and this, the last one, which is the one coming from this entangled pair, here one that is missing, is the one of Bob. So the last one in this line is only the one that goes to Bob. Now, there is a long calculation that I will not do, but it is easy to reproduce. One can put these states, it's just a rewriting on the basis. This quantum state can be written in the following form, 1 half psi 1 alpha 0 plus beta 1 plus 1 half psi 2 alpha 1 plus beta 0 psi 3 alpha 0 minus beta 1 plus 1 half psi 4 minus alpha 1 plus beta 0. And this psi 1, psi 2, psi 3, psi 4 are exactly the four states that we had in the following case, which are a basis of states for two qubits. This is how Alice put her two bits together, and the last one is the one that goes to Bob. So this is Alice states. This is the two photons that Alice, this is the photon that Bob has. This is the photon that Alice, Bob, etc. And you can show that this is true, it is just some calculation, and show that everything goes, that everything cancels, and you get this. But basically you have everything, because at this point, Alice can do a measurement. She could, for instance, find that her photon, her two photons, because she has a system of two qubits, are in the state psi 1. Then she tells to Bob, do nothing. And here there's an important point. They need to speak to each other through a classical channel. They can use a phone, they can use a radio connection, whatever, but something that it is not superluminal, a classical channel. So if Alice finds psi 1, then she tells Bob, do nothing. And Bob has already the same photon that Alice wanted to transport. Okay? But it can be that Alice finds psi 2. Then through the classical channel, she would tell to Bob, apply U2. The second transformation that we had there. That would see then, would say that when, if Bob applies U2, transform the state that she has in alpha 0 plus beta 1. And again, you transform the original, the qubit of Bob, into the qubit that Alice wanted to transport. It can be that Alice finds psi 3 in her measurement. Then she tells to the classical channel, apply, you should apply U3. Use U3. And if you use U3, which was that one over there, is which of the sign of the second? Again, Bob gets the qubit, the original one. And the same also for U4. You already understood, if Alice measures psi 4, she tells to apply U4 and that's it. So you transported the qubit from Alice to Bob, but you didn't break this no cloning theorem, because through the measurement, Alice completely lost this qubit. The configuration alpha 0 q beta 1, beta 1, is not anymore at Bob, at Alice, it is at Bob place. It has been moved from here to there. And when the measurement, so the point is that it's not enough to measure psi 1 and psi 2 and psi 3, psi 4, which causes a collapse, because this collapse goes to two, four different states. You still need the classical channel in such a way that Alice tells Bob which operation apply on her bit, qubit, in order to generate again the original state phi. So it's, you cannot do it, there is no superluminal interaction, because the classical channel is always needed to send this qubit. But once the classical channel has been used, and Bob has either done nothing, or used U2, or U3, or U4, then you know for sure that Bob has the original qubit of that Ellis had. Of course, you can, in principle, generalize it to any quantum state. And the outcome is always the same, so the main features are always the same, and are that the original quantum state that Ellis had is not anymore at Ellis. Bob gets this very complicated quantum state, whatever it is. But in order to do it, you always need a classical channel to transform to transfer the information. So which operation should Bob use on her qubit in order to get that? And I think that we are, 44 is perfect on time to finish for today. Then it means that tomorrow is good to start with Bohm interpretation and eventually also Everett, that they fit together. Then to have the last day for collapse, gravitation, and the Zeno effect. So this is more or less the plan. Okay, thank you very much.